first ever anti-spyware coalition public workshop. We're really pleased to have such a great turnout today. When we were first talking about this, we didn't know how many people we'd have. We guessed, 200, 250, and we ended up with over 350 people pre-registering. So really has been a successful event from our original goals here. In looking at what we wanted to accomplish today, just to give you an overview, there were two main goals here. The first is to move this discussion forward about how to stop spyware, how to fight spyware, and some of the issues involved in that are involved and that a lot of us have been involved in discussing for quite a long period of time now. We really feel have become much more focused over the past 6 to 8 months. We felt that now is the time to start to have this discussion. And secondly, is to put a face on the coalition. We've had public comment periods for our documents. We put out several statements. We've been involved in a lot of the discussions, but we've never really met face-to-face with non-members before. So if you see someone, you look at people's tags, people with the blue tag, are members of the coalition, feel free to engage in conversation between members and non-members. I'll be talking a little bit more during lunch about ASC has accomplished in the past and what we're looking to do in the future. We'll get that across as well. But just to get things started so people understand what we're trying to do, please feel free to talk to members and introduce yourself and so we can have a discussion between members and non-members as part of this conversation. The agenda today really is meant to give a real overview of the issues in the morning, to start talking about where the problem comes from, who's affected by the problem, and some possible solutions. The afternoon, we're going to try and focus in on those solutions and really drill into much more detail. Some people have said to me, well, some of these breakout sessions are great. I wish we could have everyone involved with these breakout sessions. But the whole idea is that when we get down to the solution level, we really want to have much more of a conversation and bring people in and have people be able to ask more questions more directly. Maybe in the future we can have more time than a single day to focus on this, but for now we really wanted to get to small groups and have people discussing some of the solutions in more detail. As we start here, it's my pleasure to hand things over to Paul Kurtz, who is the executive director of the Cybersecurity Industry Alliance, who were kind enough to sponsor the breakfast this morning. CSIA has been a major player and helper in the anti-spyware coalition. Paul.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks to CDT and the other members of the anti-spyware coalition for bringing us all together today. I really want to commend CDT and, in particular, Ari, for his dedicated leadership on the Anti-Spyware Coalition. I just a brief hand for Ari for everything he's done to get everybody here today. CSIA is dedicated to ensuring the privacy, reliability, and integrity of information systems through public policy, technology, education, and awareness. It is my great pleasure this morning to kick off our busy agenda by introducing Deborah Platt Majoras, who was sworn in a year and a half ago as chairman of the Federal Trade Commission. Her tenure thus far has been marked by an aggressive effort to protect the personal data of consumers by taking strong action against companies that do not have adequate information security safeguards in place, the most recent example being the settlement with ChoicePoint that was announced last month. The fact that the $10 million civil penalty is the largest in the FTC's history says a great deal. It puts companies on notice that those who do not take information security seriously are likely to regret it. Beyond all the other penalties and bad press, consider for a moment that the implications of a required third-party audit over the next 20 years with strict government compliance sends a real message Chairman Majors clearly understands that too many CEOs have not grasped that information is the single most valuable asset that companies have today. Until we have a change in mentality among many CEOs, the FTC will remain very busy. The same is true on the spyware front. I note the University of Washington's recent study, it was announced within the past couple of days, going out among 20 million different websites, and 1 in 20 files that they came across were executable with piggyback download, piggyback spyware within. Before taking the helm of the FTC, Deborah Platt Majors served as partner in the antitrust section of Jones Day here in Washington. She has also been a member of the firm's technology issues practice and has broad experience in both commercial disputes and criminal cases. Previously, she served as the Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General for Antitrust at the U.S. Department of Justice, where she oversaw matters involving industries from technology to banking to entertainment. With this kind of resume, Chairman Majors is well positioned to not only fight the scourge of spyware from a law enforcement perspective, but to also work with members of Congress to ensure they take spyware seriously as well on the Hill. We're grateful that she has taken the time here today, away from her busy schedule, to speak to us. And without any further delay, Chairman Majors.
Well, thank you so much, Paul, for that very generous introduction. It really is my pleasure to be here with all of you for the Anti-Spyware Coalition's first public meeting. And I thank CDT in particular, which convened the coalition, for inviting me to be here with you today. CDT has been an important advocate for consumers on technology issues in general and on spyware issues in particular. In another first, I want to tell you that my remarks here this morning will be available on the first ever FTC podcast and downloadable video file. So we're trying to get with it over at the FTC. As you may know, the FTC's mission is to protect consumers from unfair or deceptive practices, whether they occur through old or new technologies. But making predictions about the nature, timing, and effect of new technologies can be humbling. In 1943, for example, Thomas Watson, then chairman of IBM, offered his insight that, quote, "There is a world market for maybe five computers," end quote. And his prediction seems a bit more reasonable when one recalls that 6 years later, Popular Mechanics magazine reported the hope that, quote, "computers in the future may only have 1,000 vacuum tubes and weigh only 1.5 tons. And if Mr. Watson were here today, I'm certain he would agree that technological advances and uses, whether beneficial or harmful, are difficult to predict. The development and widespread deployment of spyware is no exception. Back in 1995, the Commission held hearings for government policymakers to consider the risks presented by rapidly evolving technologies such as the Internet and to formulate policies to address the risks. We gathered more than 70 experts from fields of law, business, technology, economics, and consumer protection to help us evaluate the consumer protection challenges of the future. Time has shown that these experts showed great foresight. But interestingly, at those hearings in 1995, no one even mentioned spyware or similar intrusive software. Yet today, spyware is fast overtaking spam as consumers' top online concern. It's understandable that the hearing participants did not predict the emergence of this digital menace called spyware. 10 years now is an eternity for technology. And the technological underpinnings for spyware were just being developed at the time that the FTC held these hearings. Today, while the problem of spyware is more clearly understood, finding the best solution to it remains a great challenge. Here, though, I think the four principal lessons the FTC learned at the 1995 hearings are still germane. First, we must study and evaluate new technologies so that we're as prepared as possible to deal with any harmful collateral developments. Second, we need to bring appropriate law enforcement actions to reaffirm the fundamental principles of FTC law in the context of new technologies. One could argue that Congress, when it passed the FTC Act so many years ago, some 90-plus years ago, showed great foresight in making that a broad statute so that we can use it to capture new practices as markets develop. Third, we must look to industry to implement self-regulatory regimes and, more importantly, to develop new technologies. I'm fond of saying that, generally speaking, if technology gets us into a mess, it's probably going to be what's going to pull us out. And finally, we need to educate our consumers so that they are taking steps to protect themselves. Now, at the 1995 hearings, CDT co-founder Jerry Berman urged us to build, quote, the intellectual capital that we need to do our jobs before we wade into these technology issues. And consistent with this advice and the Commission's longstanding approach, one of our first steps in responding to spyware and other problems arising from new technology has been to educate ourselves so that we can develop, implement, and advocate effective policies. So in 2004, the FTC sponsored a public workshop entitled Monitoring Software on Your PC, Spyware, Adware, and Other Software. And then last March, we released a staff report based on the information that we received in connection with that workshop. The report recommended that the private sector and government act separately from one another and in concert to combat the scourge of spyware. The report included three specific recommendations for private entities. One, assistance with law enforcement efforts. Two, expansion of consumer education efforts. And three, the development both of new technologies to protect consumers and of standards for defining spyware and disclosing information about it. The report also included three specific recommendations for government. One, increased law enforcement. Two, expanded consumer education efforts. And three, encouragement of technological solutions. The agenda for today's conference, which includes a great deal of discussion about corporate responsibilities, technology, education, industry, self-regulation, and enforcement, suggests that the report's recommendations are on the same page, are well-developed, and we'll be eager to hear your thoughts today as you go through this exercise. One of the principal conclusions of our spyware report was that spyware presents consumer protection issues similar to those posed by more traditional technologies, and that active enforcement of our consumer protection laws is an important step in preventing the spread of spyware. We also found that many of the most troubling aspects of the problem raised issues that we can attack under existing consumer protection law. Under our grant of broad authority to challenge unfair or deceptive acts and practices, the Commission's launched an aggressive law enforcement program to fight spyware. To be sure, spyware presents new challenges in detection, apprehension, and enforcement. But through litigation, we have successfully challenged the distribution of spyware that's causing injury to consumers in the online marketplace. And our law enforcement actions reaffirm three key principles about spyware. First, a consumer's computer belongs to him or her, not to the software distributor. Second, buried disclosures do not work, just as they've never worked in more traditional areas of commerce. And third, if the distributor puts a program on a consumer's computer that the consumer does not want, then the consumer must be able to uninstall or disable it. The first principle reflects the basic common sense notion that internet businesses are not free to help themselves to the resources of a consumer's computer. And this principle is reflected in the FTC's first spyware case, FTC versus Seismic Entertainment. In that case, the Commission alleged that the defendants exploited a known vulnerability in Internet Explorer to download spyware to users' computers without their knowledge. Specifically, we alleged that the defendants used drive-by tactics to install their software, which, among other things, hijacked consumers' home pages, caused the display of an incessant stream of pop-ups, allowed the secret installation of additional software, and caused computers to severely slow down or crash. We alleged that the conduct was unfair in violation of Section 5 of the FTC Act, and a federal district court entered a temporary injunction prohibiting the defendants from using this method to distribute their software. One bankrupt corporate defendant has entered into a settlement agreement with the Commission, and our litigation is ongoing with the remaining defendants. This principle was also reflected in our most recent spyware action, FTC versus Internet Media, Inc. There, we alleged that defendants, with the aid of their network of webmaster affiliates, duped consumers into downloading and installing their exploitive software code by disguising it as innocuous free software or freeware, such as internet browser upgrades, music files, cell phone ringtones, and song lyrics. Not surprisingly, the code was not a browser upgrade, a security patch, or some other innocuous type of freeware. Instead, as the complaint alleges, the code tracked internet activity, changed homepage settings, inserted frames on computer screens, inserted toolbars, and display pop-up ads, even when the browser was closed. One affiliate operated a website that offered free music files to bloggers, as well as to other website operators, to play as background music on their blogs. But unbeknownst to the bloggers, the affiliate bundled the exploitive code with the free music files. And once the music code was copied and pasted onto the blogs, the affiliate co-opted the blogs and turned them into vehicles to distribute the exploitive code even more widely. Here again, once we were able to track down the perpetrators, we were able to obtain a preliminary injunction which prohibited the defendants from continuing their illegal spyware distribution and froze over $2 million in personal and corporate assets. And that case remains in litigation. Now, the second principle is that burying critical information in the End User License Agreement, or EULA, does not satisfy the requirement for clear and conspicuous disclosure. Buried disclosures do not work. Indeed, what we see is that companies know they don't work, which is why they put them there. This principle is illustrated in FTC versus Odysseus Marketing. In that case, the defendant offered consumers a free software program that purported to make them anonymous when using peer-to-peer file sharing programs. And the commission alleged that the defendants failed to disclose adequately to consumers that this anonymizer program was also installing other harmful programs. The existence of the programs was only disclosed in the middle of the EULA, which consumers likely did not review before accepting the program. And we allege that this was deceptive in violation of Section 5 of the Act. And in this case, defendants have agreed to stop these practices while the case is pending. In the Advertising.com Inc. case, the respondents offered consumers a free security software program, but allegedly disclosed only in the EULA that the program was bundled with software that traced consumers' internet browsing and delivered pop-up advertising. And we recently issued a final consent order resolving complaint allegations that this was also a failure to disclose adequately in violation of Section 5. And from now on, these respondents will be required to disclose clearly and prominently any adware that they're bundling with software advertised to enhance security and privacy. The third principle, that if a distributor puts a program on a computer that the consumer does not want, the consumer should be able to uninstall or disable it, is underscored again in the Odysseus case. That complaint alleged that consumers could not uninstall the harmful software that Odysseus downloaded and which had changed consumer search results and the like. Couldn't be done through any reasonable means, such as by using the add remove function in the Windows operating system. And according to the complaint, the defendants purported to provide instructions for uninstalling the program, but those instructions were extremely difficult for consumers to find, and more importantly, they simply did not work, even if they could find them. Again, we allege violations of Section 5. As far as we're concerned, the dissemination of harmful, unremovable programs that are frustrating consumers' ability to control their own computers is digital carjacking, and we intend to continue to vigorously prosecute it. Now, there is a fourth related principle that can be drawn from our work on spyware and from our efforts to stop deceptive and unfair abuses of technology generally, and that is that we are all in this together. Consumers, government, technology, and other companies have a shared interest and responsibility, whether we're talking about security, spam, or spyware. I've just talked a bit about the government's role in enforcement, and now I want to spend a minute on the part that industry can play. There is some good news here, Technology is moving forward. For example, some operating systems and browsers are now including tools that help protect consumers' computers from unauthorized software downloads. Companies offering anti-spyware software, including many of those who I understand are here today, have made significant efforts to improve their products' scanning capabilities and are working to detect and prevent unauthorized software downloads. And Internet service providers are offering anti-spyware services to their members. In recognition, in fact, of the importance consumers are now placing on the security of their computers, we are seeing companies compete on the basis of security packages. I applaud the efforts that industry has made to develop and deploy new technologies to combat spyware, and I hope that these efforts are just the beginning. Industry self-regulation has the potential to become an important complement to the technological development and government action here. Not surprisingly, the challenge for self-regulation has been defining with sufficient precision what is considered to be spyware and should be therefore subject to prohibitions and limitations. Recently, there have been some promising initial developments, and these developments may ultimately benefit consumers as well as businesses. The efforts of the Anti-Spyware Coalition are one example. As everyone here appreciates, there are currently substantial disputes between anti-spyware companies and other software developers about how to define spyware. The FTC's report from the 2004 workshop recognized the difficulty in reaching a universal definition. The stated goal of the coalition is to make clear what anti-spy companies consider to be spyware. And other initiatives are also seeking to help define it. For example, Trusted Download Program plans to create a whitelist of programs that meet the organization's standards, while the StopBadware.org initiative intends to create a blacklist of programs that do not meet that group's standards. Such efforts, and in particular the efforts to be inclusive, may be useful first steps toward meaningful industry self-regulation. In the adware context, the question of disclosure, whether the consumer has been notified adequately of and consented to the installation of a particular adware program, has been a key issue. TrustE's Trusted Download Program is intended to create a notice regime to address the issue. And the Interactive Travel Services Association and the board of the Direct Marketing Association recently adopted guidelines that address how to disclose that adware will be installed. Without endorsing any particular approach or definition, I can state that these initial anti-spyware self-regulatory developments are quite promising. Self-regulation can be prompt, flexible, and responsive, characteristics that are very important in markets that are changing so rapidly. Self-regulation can also be based on the judgment and experience of industry members who are likely to be able to work together to devise workable rules. Industry support and participation are key to any self-regulatory regime, and the level of participation and support in these efforts will undoubtedly determine how effective they are. Consumers also have a critical role in combating spyware and other technological problems. But of course, if they are going to play that important role, it is essential that they be informed. In October of 2004, we issued a publication that detailed what consumers can do to reduce their risk of having spyware downloaded on their computers. It also lists clues that may notify consumers that they have spyware and explains what consumers can do to get rid of spyware. And we're often asked, how many consumer complaints do you get about spyware? Well, it's really hard to tell because, given the nature of spyware, when consumers' computers start wigging out on them and going wacky, they don't necessarily know what's causing it. That contributes sometimes to the difficulty that we have in our law enforcement efforts. But it's also important to remember that spyware is simply one part of a larger picture of computer security risks. We're now taking an approach rather than simply warning consumers of individual risks. We think it's important to educate them to be on guard whenever they are online. And to do just that, the Commission teamed up with other federal agencies and the technology industry last fall to create a new campaign, On Guard Online, which is designed to help computer users guard against internet fraud, secure their computers, and protect their personal information. And Nat Wood, who is here, our assistant director in the Division of Consumer and Business Education, is going to describe this program in more detail for you this afternoon. A wide range of partners already support this initiative, including the Internet Education Foundation, the National Cybersecurity Alliance, TrustE, iSafe, AARP, the National Consumers League, and the Better Business Bureaus. And to achieve maximum distribution of our materials, we have not branded them as our own, as FTC materials. Instead, we're encouraging any organization, private, public sector, wherever, who's interested in computer security, to link to onguardonline.gov to distribute our free brochure. You can even put your own company or agency's name on it. We don't care. We just want it reprinted and out there. So I hope that all of you who are present today will help us get the important computer safety messages out there. I always tell the staff, think about the urban legends on the Internet and how fast they get around the entire country. That's what we need to achieve, too. We need to make our materials so fascinating and interesting that they will get around like wildfire. And we're very proud of this program, and if you haven't seen it, I hope you'll take a look. Finally, in our law enforcement investigations, we're increasingly seeing cases in which, of course, the international nature of spyware distribution hampers effective law enforcement. We need a better basis for international law enforcement to combat spyware. Legislation introduced by Senator Gordon Smith, the U.S. Safe Web Act, is currently pending in the United States Senate, and we are pushing for its enactment so that we will not be hampered, as today we are in some ways, in our cross-border investigations. Certainly spyware purveyors are not hampered by borders. We need to break down these borders so that we're not either. And this afternoon, Manisha Mittal, our acting associate director of our Division of International Consumer Protection, will provide a more detailed discussion of that legislation for you. As I stated earlier, a decade has passed since the FTC held hearings to identify significant consumer protection issues associated with new technologies. To be sure, our analysis and exploration of emerging issues has never stopped, and we often examine high-tech issues, spam and spyware, RFID, wireless communications, data security, on an individual basis, convening workshops, publishing reports, and developing multi-pronged solutions to address each problem. But it's time, again, to look ahead and examine the next generation of issues to emerge in our high-tech global marketplace. So I am pleased to announce this morning that next fall, the FTC will once again bring together the experts to engage in a robust dialogue on the state of technology and the future of consumer protection. At these hearings, we will address a series of critical questions. What have we learned over the past decade? How can we apply these lessons to what we do know and what we cannot know as we look to the future? And how can we best protect consumers in a marketplace that now knows no bounds, is virtual, 24/7, and truly global? And I hope that you will join us for that very important event. And I thank you very much for your time this morning.